This is actually, this letter is in the in volume 4, and this is letter number 1031. So, you know, in Israel, they have two chief rabbis. They have a Sephardic chief rabbi, and they have an Ashkenazi chief rabbi. They're working on it now, or there's been attempts to try to streamline it, to make just one chief rabbi for all lately. You know, it's been... they're trying to, it won't happen, I'm not sure exactly the politics of it, but for many, many generations there's been two chief rabbis, one for the Sephardic community, one for the Ashkenazi community. Now, actually, the laws are different in some Ashkenazi rulings, and the Sephardic rulings are different. I mean, we're all same people, although we're one people. Sometimes the some people in the Sephardic community will say that they're the real Jews, that not the Ashkenazi. Ashkenazi, vice versa, say, have a different. But there's two chief rabbis in Israel. So the previous letter, we read a letter from the Rebbe to the Sephardic chief rabbi. This letter, the Rebbe addresses again to the Rebbe calls him Rav Roshi. Of course, he's not a Rishon Letzion over here, because he was the Ashkenazi Rebbe. But I'm just interested to look if the titles over here are matching each other, or the Rebbe changed around the titles over here. It's kind of, I have a problem going back over here. I wanted to check just to see if the Rebbe gives some, the Rebbe gives very nice, you know, titles, Rabbi such, and, you know, keeps
how
on.
How the chief rabbi is chosen?
In Israel?
Yeah,
that's, you know, they're chosen by the
election.
No, the various different, yeah, there's an election, Knesset, sure, definitely. But election, but the question is, I thought you were asking how to get, who gets to vote, yeah, by it. So there's a makeup between the various different, I guess, community, religious community. Each religious community sends a representative, sort of a representative, and that, you know, I'm not sure exactly, but it goes by election, by, and then there's some, I think maybe some Knesset input, this, that, there's like what the law is, they have like a balance, and there's
a number of years that they serve, and then they go to the,
unfortunately, I don't know if you've heard, well, listened to the news, one of the previous chief rabbis was been indicted, and he's been embezzlement over there. Oh. Embezzlement. No, that mikveh. That's another. That's a local one. This is a chief. That's a chief rabbi in Israel, and he was very, you know. He used to go around and give talks and everything else, and you know, used to in Israel. There's very strict laws that, you know, the rabbi is on a paid salary. This is the one difference between Israel. And here in Israel, the rabbis get paid by the government. The government, all the rabbis, get, not all the. I mean, you have to go through. Those were recognized.
Right.
Like I have a brother who's a rabbi of a community, and he is paid. And they get paid decent. They get like a judge. You know, similar. They're treated pretty well. And you know, they're cracking down on also the rabbis lately. I've seen that they want to make them file a report, but the rabbis, there was no oversight in them. They can do, you know, they're a rabbi in a community, and that's it, you know, and then it's sort of a life position. It's a tenured position, you know, and you're there. Yeah, you don't, no, there's no challenges, and there's no check and balances over there either. It's just, so the difference is in the diaspora, you know, in most cases, you know, there's a board of directors that hires, that pays the rabbi, but over there the government pays. So once the government pays, you know, there is no real, there's nobody. And the other thing, what? The government, everything. The government pays
everything.
Why do you think, why is religious life so strong in Israel? It's the reason, and why is Israel, you know, the conservative and reform are trying to get a foothold there. They've been fighting and screaming and kicking, and why? It's all because the government pays for it. And locally, the shul pays, whoever the shul pays for it, they say, we want this, and that's what the people pay for. So they get what they pay for. Over there, they don't pay for it. Over there, the government pays for it. That's why.
Now they want them to do military service, do that.
That's a whole other thing. But the point here is that the one, you know, they say, the golden rules, right? The one who has the gold is the one that rules. So over here, the one, over here, huh?
That means the yeshivas, the government pays everything.
Well, no, this is not such a simple They get stipends and they get budgets, and in Israel it's like in everywhere else. It's not what you know is who you know.
But there's also
and there's connections and there's
totally true. It's called protexia.
Protexia. You know, over there, like in Israel, look, it's 3 o'clock, the bank closes. If you know the bank manager, he'll keep it open for another 15 minutes for you.
You know what? So, we couldn't get a phone in Israel, and my dad was a doctor, and we were like, we need a phone. So we tried. Our neighbor goes, I have connection in the phone company. Next day, we got the phone.
Like that. So everything works with protection over there.
If you get tenure in the States, your kids go free to university.
Right.
So maybe if, you know, the rabbi gets tenure, maybe his kids could go free to yeshiva.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but I'm not sure. In school in Israel, by the way, schooling is free too.
Right.
Even Orthodox, but it's not the level that the school. It's called Dati Lumi. That's the religious part. Israeli government provides for education for everybody, including for religious education too. But of course, for the Haredi, for the very religious, that education isn't good enough. So they have, this was one of the big things in Israel, in which they started their own like network of schools. They're not fully funded, but they're partially funded. That's where all the religious parties, they come in and they become in the government, and they have a lot of say, and that's where a lot of the other people get angry that they're using their influence and the fact that the government needs them to make the government to get monies, but then to get in Israel, the most important word is taktivim. They get these budgets, they get these funding, they get the funding from the government, and you get, you know, like, they give it to the, what's called the Misrad HaDatot, the religious affairs minister. So they get from the government like 10 million shekel. Now you got to know somebody to get some of those shekels over there. You have to convince them that what you're doing is good or whatever, whoever. And if you get some people inside who know is there. Yeah. But in Israel, it's more Hamish, you know. It's more Hamish, yeah.
We went to Israel in the 70s. You were either religious or very secular. And the secular people, they'd go to the beach on Yom Kippur. But now, like you said, they have the Misorti, and they're trying to get it in between. I don't know if it's successful. Yeah.
Okay, let's just go here. We got carried away over here.
Would the government pay for a conservative rabbi?
No, that's the whole. They're starting. They've been trying very, very hard for that.
And marriages.
They've been trying, yes. But they don't recognize it, and the religious, you know, people, you know, have the votes, and they have the block in Israel, and that's been, and that's been. I mean, we have to realize. I mean, we have to live together. We're one Jewish people. We have one country, and what we have ideas like that are different from each other totally. But what do we do? So the religious people have their needs. The Haredi people have their needs. They have their needs. And you're not going to change them, and they are not going to live anything anyway, any other way. So there has to be, I think, the leadership, even if they're not religious, the people that are smart realize that we have to find ways to coexist, that we can't say, no, you all have to go to the army or else you're all going to jail. Because that's not going to happen. And we don't even want that. So sometimes there are certain governments or there are people that inflame other people by bringing out and showing and pointing to the fact they don't go to the army, they don't go to work, they don't pay into the pot. What are we going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to ship them to Gaza? What are you going to do with them? You're not going to change them. That's it. So you can't live in your place. And so, you know what? Sometimes it is what we're going to do. I mean, it's like a family. You have several kids, according to your view, that have problems. So you got to support them anyways. What are you going to do? I mean, you're not going to feed. So you're saying these people are having all these kids, and they can't feed them. They don't make a living. So they're having all these kids. And then, so what are you going to let them? You're going to let them starve? You're going to force them not to have any kids? So what are you going to do? Now, the problem they're having is there's only that much weight that the other part of the population can carry. Otherwise, it defaulted. But you can't. It's a problem. It's a real problem. You can't. The solution of the problem is not saying no. They should stop their lifestyle. That's not going to happen.
Well, that creates a lot.
And there's too many. If there was like 25 of them, is one thing.
But that's why Ben Gurion, they had to have a compromise.
Exactly.
Ben Gurion
was smart. He worked with the rabbis. They worked it out.
He was the most secular of all.
That's right. And yet, he
creates a lot of resentment because, like, they'll say LL can't fly on Saturday. Well, I don't know if they even do anymore.
They don't.
And they would say, why can't we open shops on Shabbat? And then this thing that in between was the Hesder. These guys go to the army. They're religious. They're not black hatters. But they feel like they can do army and still be.
Really? Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? You're talking about like the close of Shabbos. It was like the Blue Lodge used to be here.
Right.
You couldn't open a store on a Sunday.
No, everything closes. I remember my father, they'd be in the middle of an operation. He'd turn around, there'd be nobody there on Fridays. They just leave.
You know, when I was in
Shabbat, I gotta go.
I was in Israel. When I was in Israel last time, I forget when it was. And it came like Friday, you know, Friday Shabbos didn't start till 7-8 o'clock or 7, I don't know, sure, but late. So, you know, over here, the shops are open, you know, till an hour before Shabbos. If you go down Kingston Avenue in Brooklyn there, you know, or Borough Park, they're an hour before Shabbos, they're open. So I didn't think much of it, you know. So Friday I needed to have something cleaned or, you know, I go over to the store, you know, it's 11:30, the guy, he's not even religious, doesn't look religious, no kippah, nothing, he was just in the store. I said, "Gonna do lunch." He says, "What am I, a goy? I got a Shabbos is coming." 6 hours before Shabbos, he closes up the shop, he goes home, he says, "What am I, going home for Shabbos?"
They enjoy those holidays.
No, so they're going home, so you wouldn't expect, but he says, no. They close up 12 o'clock or something like that. I mean, I can't
remember. So
close up, it's half a day,
so
and that's
power
it.
Power in Israel, the religious group. Like, there was, I forget when it was years
ago. It's their Sunday almost, like by us. Shabbos is Sunday. Sunday, there's
there
Friday.
Cars driving through religious areas. Like Shabbat,
they stone them, right?
Well, they'd stone them, or they then put up, they were able to, you know, legally put up, chains and things that you can't drive there.
They block and everything else, but you know.
But the secular people go to the beach on Shabbos,
right? Or holiday.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just do this letter over here. We got all carried away. This is to the chief rabbi, and the Rebbe Tzedus Shalom Abrocha, and he says again, as they're approaching the time of Matan Torah, I want to give my expression, my blessings, that we should celebrate the receiving of the Hashem's whole Torah with joy and with an inner. And according to the setting of that year, apparently again, it was on Sunday they started counting, and it was after 7 full weeks. So according to all, it was complete days, as opposed if it comes out on any other day besides Sunday, then it's not the real Tumimus. That's the whole discussion, the Gemara, it's too much for now to get into. These quotes here also from the Rambam, that says that Pesach was on Shabbos, and which means that they counted them, but he refers to them, the Rambam, as the fools imagined. Meaning to say that he calls there were those people who didn't believe in the sages, and they disagreed. They counted the Omer every year, Machras HaShabbos, actually on Sunday, versus the day after Pesach. We start always counting the day after the first day of Pesach, we start counting. They started counting after the Shabbat. And so he calls them fools. Why? Because they're answer is not a good answer. As Rambam says, that they imagined that Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 7th of Adar. It was either on Shabbos or on Erev Shabbos. So then it turns out that the Machras HaPesach, when they went into Eretz Yisrael, was on Tuesday, and they didn't have yet the rule of Lebedu Pesach, And the Rebbe sends him blessing. This is a little bit of a complicated piece over here, and I guess we'll leave it at this. It's a halach very interesting, but we need to explain all this. So we'll leave it at that.
What does machris mean?
Machris means the day after.